And welcome to this episode of Games UX. Today we're going to be talking about three exciting topics: Octopath Traveler. We're going to talk more about Destiny. Forsaken's coming out next week or a week and a half from now, so we have to hit on that a little bit more because we know more information. And then finally, we're going to be talking about PUBG, because PUBG has started a Fix PUBG initiative, and I think a lot of people have thought that game's broken in some way for a while, so that sounds pretty interesting. We have two guests today, if you guys would like to introduce yourselves.
Hey, I'm Nathan. I am an iOS developer.
And I'm Chris. I'm a product designer.
Groovy. Let's get down to it. So Octopath Traveler, I haven't touched it. I've watched previews of it. I've watched trailers and people play online. But Nathan, you have been playing it quite a bit. Is this not true?
I have been playing it quite a bit. I think I haven't finished it yet, but I've got over 30 hours into it.
It's like a 200-hour game, though, isn't it?
Or I think if you play like all the content, it's well over 100 hours. I don't know if I'm going to put over 100 hours into it. I guess that remains to be seen. But I've definitely, for 30 hours, I don't think I'm nearly as far into the main content of the game as I could be. I've definitely been doing some side quests.
So I'm definitely in the same boat as Charlie. So like, give me a summary as to what type of a game this is and what's been holding your interest.
Yeah, sure. So Octopath Traveler is a JRPG of sorts. JRPG, short for Japanese RPG, which is a subgenre of RPG titles that is includes games like Final Fantasy, other like RPGs like Dragon Warrior, Tales series, etc. So they're deeply rooted in like very traditional kinds of games. Play. If a game is labeled a JRPG, it usually is very formulaic and adheres to like things like sort of a turn-based battle system where you take turns with enemies, and it's usually very plot heavy, lots of text to read, dialogue, a very in-depth story, level progression, a party of characters that you're traveling along with trying to save the world, whatever. So Octopath Traveler is it's a JRPG, but it kind of departs from a lot of the traditional aspects of JRPGs in a way. That's kind of why I think it has hooked my interest so much, and also disappointed a lot of other people at the same time. It's got a bit of a back and forth rap with critics and fans with regards to its untraditional following of the JRPG formula.
Just to help me understand JRPG a little bit more, two questions about it. One is Persona. Is that like a JRPG style game?
Yeah, it would be. Persona, I would consider a JRPG, although it's also somewhat untraditional in some ways, but it's still got the turn-based battle system. It's still got a band of characters and really heavy story and dialogue and stuff like that. So I think that definitely fits into the JRPG genre.
And then two, are all JRPGs made in Japan?
I don't know if I can answer that question. Obviously, they started in Japan.
Right. I just want to know, has anyone broken the genre geographically?
Well, with the rise of Western game development, there's certainly been plenty of Western game companies, American, European, who have made JRPG games, and in the same vein, for sure. So I would say, yeah, probably you could call some Western games JRPGs, but
like a Seattle most of them are RPG.
Oh no.
Okay, so now my next question about JRPGs, I guess, is they're always turn-based, right? So there's no like live action necessarily.
Not usually like it. So there isn't like a set of like bullet point like rules that a game has to follow to be doesn't get into JRPG. But usually, traditionally, if someone calls a game a JRPG, you can expect that like it's gonna be a turn-based battle system. The latest Final Fantasy 15. I would still call it a JRPG. I mean, it's in the Final Fantasy series, but it had a fully like action oriented battle system. You controlled one character and you just ran around and swung your sword and stuff, and everybody else was AI controlled. So there's some leeway. It's not like it's not locked down, but usually you hear the term JRPG, you're getting more traditional old style turn-based combat.
So I've never even heard of this game before, but before you guys having mentioned it, and I'm just been watching reviews and trailers on this thing, the first thing that jumped out at me right away is how beautiful this game is.
Like, yeah,
the tilt shift focus style is really this works well.
So this developer, they work in close partnership with Squaresoft, which is who makes the Final Fantasy and Dragon Warrior games. They had one more game before this. They're kind of still a new developer, and the last one they made was on 3DS, and that was like a 3D game. It was an RPG. It was called Bravely Default. This game carries with it a lot of the stuff that Bravely Default established in terms of game mechanics and stuff, but they decided to go old school with this one, and it's like a pretty strong throwback to SNES RPGs, like Final Fantasy VI, especially with like when you're in combat, your party characters, your player characters are still like tiny little chibi sprites, and then the enemies are like these big detailed sprites that are like they don't really make any sense. Like that's kind of like a silly little throwback, but they've like spruced it up. It's like it's made in the Unreal Engine. Yeah, and so it's got like not dynamic, but you know, really nice lighting and like shadows, like particle effects, depth of field. Yeah, it's crazy to look at what looks like a 2D game, but it's actually of course 3D, and in this new way, it's really gorgeous.
I saw a lot of initial feedback that was just like, oh, they're using what is like these traditional like SNES style elements, but then layering these layers of tilt shift and like particle based stuff. It basically brings like a whole life out of that stuff that I think it seems pretty exciting. And one review I heard, they ended it by saying like, they were like, I don't care if they don't make another Octopath Traveler game, but they need to make another game that looks like this.
Yeah. They broke some new ground with this art style, and definitely think other people, if not this developer, are probably going to be following suit.
Okay, so Persona had a pretty subversive interface for what is like pretty traditional JRPG gameplay, right? Mm-hmm. So what is the interface of this game like when you're interacting with it?
It's totally traditional. Like it's just you walk up to people, you talk to them, you open up your menu, you've just got a list of options to select from, and you're in a battle, you just have a list of like a boring little bulleted list of commands to choose from and stuff. There is nothing special visually going on with any of the interactions in the game.
They kept it close to home, very very conservative.
Yeah, there's some actually annoyances with it that I've found, like some oversights that I feel like really should have been QA'd out. Like if whenever you're in a battle, anytime you like have a row selected in your commands, it always has like a drop down like description of what that command does, and it obscures whatever's below it, and you can't make that like description go away. It's always there, and so you're constantly having to scroll up and down just to read like you can never see what's next. You have to scroll down to see what's next, and then you end up scrolling back up because you're like, oh, I don't want that. So despite all the polish they gave to like the graphics, the UI wasn't given quite the same level of polish, it seems.
Oh man, no, like if there's UI problems, I feel like I'm obligated to play it now. Is that bad? That probably shouldn't be a thing.
It's not glaring, but it's just a little minor
you're
thing.
You're playing on Switch, right?
Yeah, it's only on Switch. It's Switch exclusive, okay. which is pretty cool. Like I said, the predecessor games, Bravely Default, and there was a sequel, were on 3DS. So it's pretty exciting that this game was made for Switch. I think it's a game the Switch needed. It's a standout. Switch is getting a lot of ports from other consoles, and that's freaking awesome. But it needs some third-party support for good games that are exclusive to the console, and this definitely fits the bill.
How does it run on the hardware?
You mean like as far as like performance?
Yeah.
Pretty good. I feel like whenever it's docked, it looks a little bit nicer. Maybe it has slightly better frame rate, but even in handheld mode, it runs without any significant hitches. Like every once in a while, I can kind of tell the game is probably running around 30 FPS, but most of the time I don't even notice it.
Okay. Yeah, I'm purely asking because like they're throwing a ton of special effects on top of all this geometry. Which looks great, but yeah, I was curious how the engine is actually handling that.
Yeah, I assume that's just thanks to Unreal Engine in a lot of ways, probably just is really optimized. I don't notice any like degrade in visual fidelity when in handheld mode versus dock mode. So,
the name of the game is Octopath Traveler. I know, therefore, there are 8 paths that the traveler can thus take. Is that not true?
So it's sort of that there are 8 different travelers that all have their own paths. So one of the big departures from this game, from typical JRPGs, is that you have 8 characters to choose from at the very beginning of the game. And it doesn't matter which one you start with.
So you play as the different characters?
Yeah. So
okay, I was not sure if you were like they were 8 different people you were like doing jobs for or something.
Oh no. These are people who eventually you can recruit to be in your party. Like in any like RPG game, like you start off with like one person you're playing as, they're like the main character, and then you gradually recruit new people for your party as you play through the game, and eventually you have too many to even have in your party at one time, and you swap them out and you pick your favorites and whatever. This does the same thing, but instead of it just being like on rails, like this is who you start with, and then this is the next person you get, and this is the next person you get, you just get to pick from the beginning, like which of these people sounds more interesting to you. Are you interested in like this like woodsman or woodswoman like hunter or this like scholar in the city, or you know, whatever, the this knight, and you start as that person, and then it's totally up to you. From that point you can go any which way around the world map to go and find the other people. You know where they are, they're on your map, and you can recruit them in any order or just not recruit them at all. Like if you wanted to, I think you can just play the game through all the way to the end like solo, which is it gives you a lot of agency as the player, much more than you certainly would get from a typical JRPG.
Does every one of these people have special abilities or like physical traits that you should optimize for?
Yeah, so the game uses a job system, which is also pretty common in JRPGs and also strategy games, where each character has their own what's called a job, which is basically just like a set of abilities that are specific to that role. Like the cleric is sort of the healer role, the priestess role, they've got light based magic abilities and healing abilities and stuff like that, and then the knight, you know, is sword combat and has a lot of like strong attacks. A mage job where you're primarily doing offensive magic attacks. So they all have their own job they start with that's specific to them, and on top of that they also have what's called a path ability, I believe is what's called. It has the word path in it. That is an environmental ability that they have, usually with regards to interacting with people in the world that only they can perform. So for example, the huntress I mentioned, actually that's who I started as. She has the ability to just fight people in the world. Like you could walk up to basically anyone in the game in any town, you know, just NPCs who usually are, you know, you wouldn't fight them. They're just people in a town. You talk to them, they give you a little bit of dialogue, whatever, you go on your way.
Yeah.
You can just fight them. And if you beat them, sometimes you get stuff from them. Sometimes they're blocking a path and then you can go around them. And so each character has their own path ability that lets them interact with the world in a unique way. And not having that person in your party, of course, precludes you from performing that action, and you're potentially missing stuff in the world. So it's like, yeah, it's this balance between, okay, well, what jobs do I want to have in my party? Like, what kind of attacks and abilities do I want in combat? But then also, what like things do I want to be able to do out in the world? Like, I like stealing stuff. Like, if I play, you know, Skyrim, for example, like, I'm typically like a sneaky person, a thief. I'm going around stealing stuff. So, like, I want that path ability. I want to be able to steal stuff from people. So there's quite a bit of variety in how you can build your party, and with regards to like optimizing for battle or exploration.
Going back to the being able to clear your path scenario. Let's say, hypothetically speaking, I wanted to do a pacifist run. Would there be an alternative ability to persuade that person from getting out of the way, or do I have to slap them around all the time?
So there are cases where you've got some options, yeah. Sometimes you don't have to beat the person up. Sometimes, like some people do have follow abilities where you can persuade the person to follow you, thus removing them from, you know, the path that they're blocking. If they're blocking a door, you just convince them to follow you. And then usually that includes being able to use them in combat from that point. But then, yeah, you could just go through the door if they're blocking a door. So instead of beating them up. But there are also cases where you can't do anything besides beat the person up, and other cases where you just have to use a specific person. But usually there's options.
So you said when you're starting that this was in a lot of ways a traditional JRPG, but then it would also potentially upset people who really like JRPGs. What part of it upsets those people? What is the part that you think that people find disturbing?
So I've read some reviews, and I can see the other perspectives. Like this, on the surface, it looked like a straight up throwback to classic like SNES era RPGs, and I think that got a lot of people pumped up. Just right, like they would have been happy if they had just gotten that, this very beautiful but very traditional JRPG, and that's not what they got. So I think even from that point right there, there was some letdown. But even digging deeper than that, I think what disappointed some people were things like the lack of like a central coherent story. Like there isn't, at least as far as I've gotten into the game so far, in the main quest lines, there isn't like a central, you know, plot, like a big bad guy, where every traveler is like rallying together to do this thing. They're just eight people who have these their own individual goals that I just want to go. I'm just going to do this thing. Hey, you're going to do a thing too. Cool. Let's do this together. And that's pretty much the beginning and end of it. And I think people were disappointed by that because that's usually when you get into a JRPG. That's what you're getting. You're getting a big story. Mm-hmm. And this game doesn't have a big story. Again, I haven't gotten to the end of the game, so maybe I just haven't seen it yet. But I think that's kind of the, like everything else kind of branches off from there. Like usually a big story comes with lots of dialogue. This game doesn't have a lot of dialogue. Whenever you're outside of the main like quest objectives anyway, and like that's honestly one of the things I like about the game, and what turned me on to it so much is that like I personally wasn't looking for that from a game. I there was a point in my life whenever I was very into JRPGs, like the traditional JRPGs. Like I wanted the big story, 100 hours, and like the linear path, the tons of dialogue, tons of character building, and this game doesn't have that to that degree anyway. And to me, that's kind of refreshing because that means I don't have to feel like I'm getting super invested in it. I can just kind of pick it up and put it down whenever I want.
To me, that kind of like reminds me of like the traditional Mass Effect series, like 1, 2, 3, going through those games. They had a big story. There was like a lot of additional stuff in them, but like they were big stories. And I think I would imagine that's something that would be attractive to a JRPG kind of person. But then like Mass Effect Andromeda, it had like technically a big story, but it had so much optionality in it in a way that it didn't resonate quite in the same way. Like you could get into it and get into the different stuff that was happening in it, but it wasn't like a single big story. I don't know if you felt that way, but
no, actually that's a pretty good comparison. Anyone familiar with the Mass Effect series up to and including Andromeda, like it's kind of the same deal. Like whereas the Mass Effect trilogy was kind of
had like central themes that were really like latched onto, right? Like now we have to get Saren or whatever. Like it was very simple. But then Andromeda was kind of like, we're in this world now and all this stuff is happening. And like I worry about storylines when they have too much like, well, when I heard about this game and I knew there were like eight stories or whatever, I was like, oh, like that's like a red flag for for me because it's like, I can't care about eight stories. Like, and I also think probably people writing it, it's like a pretty intense challenge to like have eight great stories or that all come together or something. I have no idea, but like,
well, after that, but if they're optional as well, how do you write a finale?
I don't know. I don't know how this game's going to end yet. Maybe there is no finale. Maybe it's just eight separate little tiny finales. I have no idea. I'm holding out hope that like something happens and like there is some sort of like, challenge that they all have to face together or whatever people you've managed to bring with you so far have to face together. With lots of options comes the challenge of figuring out how to like bring it all to a head at the end. So far with what I've seen in the game, I am definitely not expecting a super grand finale, but I'm okay with that personally.
Yeah. Well, when you are done with it, we'll have another conversation on this show and you can spoil it for anyone who hasn't played it.
See, I had my finger over the buy button and then you just like right at the end, we're like, oh, no, I'm not going to buy it. Okay.
All right. So there's one more thing I do want to talk about this game. Maybe this will steer you back into it. Haven't talked about the battle system yet.
Okay.
And the battle system is the meat of this game. Like we've talked about how like the story and the characters aren't super engaging, at least from a traditional JRPG standpoint. But the battle system is the feedback loop that keeps me coming back to this game. It's turn-based, like I said, but it's got this like extra layer on top of it. And this is what's really interesting to me. Like, so a lot of JRPGs kind of switch up the formula from time to time. Like nobody wants to just play the same game over and over again. So like, for example, early in the Final Fantasy series, it was all very turn-based. And then gradually they started introducing around the PlayStation era and towards the end of the SNES era with like Chrono Trigger and stuff, they introducing this like time-based. Like, so instead of just taking turns, now you've got these time meters that are filling up. Mm-hmm. But it felt like integrated deeply within the battle system at the point where it kind of like changed it, and that's not how Octopath feels. It's like it really does feel like two different layers. So you've got the turn-based layer where you just literally just taking turns with the enemy back and forth, like, okay, now it's this person's turn, now it's this enemy's turn, and you're just swinging at each other, and that's very basic. But then there's like I don't remember the term they give it. In Bravely Default, it was the predecessor game. It was called Braving and Defaulting. This company isn't very good with names. Like they named their prior RPG after just like the battle mechanic, and they named this RPG after the fact that there's eight people. So they kind of evolved it a little bit, or actually kind of streamlined it in a way where each time you take a turn, you're accruing these battle points. You get one for each turn, and if you use them, they have one of two effects. They either increase the effect of the attack, so like the amount of damage that it does, the amount of turns the status effect lasts, whatever you're doing, you can apply it to anything you can do, and it makes it stronger in some way. And you can stack it up to three times. So you're constantly like deciding when you want to use these points to make your attack stronger and just like destroy the enemy. Like there's different points in the battle where, like, you know, if it's weaker enemies, maybe you can just spend your one point that you start with at the beginning and you just wipe them out because they're weak enemies and they don't even get a chance to attack you at all. And then, but if it's a boss, you're probably going to want to like save those up over several turns and like unleash them all at once, like do big heavy attacks. And the second part to this is that there's also this like system of like breaking enemies. So like every enemy has a weakness. That's nothing new for really any game, JRPGs especially. But if you hit their weakness a specific number of times, they like lose their turn. Like they just don't attack for the remainder of their turn or the following turn.
Like a stun sort of thing.
Like a what? Sorry.
Like a stun effect where they just can't do damage.
Yeah, exactly. So they're just like, they're stunned and they're also weaker to incoming incoming damage during that. So you can kind of see where this is going probably. Like, you want to use your points to make your attack stronger while they're in their weakened state for maximum damage.
That is
and,
fun.
It sounds really... Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, so I just said that does sound like fun because it seems like it's like kind of gambling. You're trying to get up to the moment where you can do the max damage in a way. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's this is all backed by like battles that really aren't trivial. Like, the game's pretty punishing. Like, it makes you use this system, and if you fail to use it, if you make a mistake, if you like, you know, try to unleash all at once and it was too soon and you don't kill them, for example, the enemies may just wipe you out and you're just like, nah, you messed up, you're dead. And so it's not like this thing that kind of just sits there and it's like, yeah, I'll use this, but I don't really need to. It's like, no, you kind of need to use this in the game, and if you don't, like, the game's gonna punish you for it. So it keeps you on your toes. It's just like it isn't like revolutionary, but it was enough to, for me, like, that spice up this classic genre of game that I grew up with and loved enough to like come back to it as an adult with a limited amount of time to play video games, and wanting to maximize my enjoyment during that. And this definitely delivered for me.
Okay, Chris.
Yeah.
Did that pull you back into the buy scenario?
It did. Yeah, I was about to say that brought back pretty strong nostalgia from Final Fantasy VII for me, mm-hmm. where, yeah, all the bosses have weaknesses or elemental damage back in the day, where, like, your one person had to have the right magic spell to weaken their defenses. Then you had your brute force guy. I forgot all their names, which is, I'm going to get a lot of hate for. right, who then had to like bring down their health points down, and then you had to like unleash this big magical demon who could then finally like kill the boss. And if you don't do those right or in order, you were dead. Or if you didn't have any phoenixes left to raise your fallen ally or something. But I haven't played a game like that since I was like a child, and right. That seems really alluring.
I feel the same way. I was pretty much a no buy on this thing the whole time until when you described the battle system. I was like, I want to try that. Like, I really have never played too many games that are even close to this. I watched my wife play through the Persona games, and that's about as close. I've never really played a Final Fantasy game. So I kind of want to get into this.
I believe there is still a demo available. At least there was before release, and I don't see why they would have pulled it after release. So it gives you like 3 hours to play the game, and it transfers if you decide to buy it. So cool.
Actively downloading right now.
Okay, anything else you want to hit on that before we move on to Forsaken?
Nope. All right, let's do it.
Okay, so here we go again. Destiny Forsaken. We learned a bunch of stuff in the past couple weeks now. And where should we start? Drops? Random rolls?
Ooh, man. I feel like everything kind of just flows from the random rolls. Like,
yeah,
the random rolls affect the next thing, and then that affects the next thing. Okay, everything kind of builds start. From there.
Destiny 2, year one, has been kind of like boring loot-wise because I've gotten probably 400 better devils.
Mm-hmm. And they're all the same.
Same fucking gun every single time. Masterworks made that a little bit more interesting. But this is like a whole new game here because every gun's going to have two perks. Every gun is going to have different stats essentially for, am I getting that right? Like, basically like every gun you get actually have like random stats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To a certain degree. Yeah.
So one better devils may roll and be actually not the one you were looking for. Maybe you want one that, or like, well, it won't be better devils, but some gun you're going to get is like, oh, this is not the right element. I'm going to like fix that. And I also want it to be more stable or something like that.
Yeah. Like, even if you, I actually forgot about the random stats. even if you get two better devils that both have this happen to get the same two perks, they could still be different guns because maybe they have slightly different stats. Maybe one has slightly more stability and the other one has slightly more range. Maybe you wanted the range.
Range pistol and one long range pistol, but it's the same gun, but you can totally load them out differently for different situations. That's very exciting to me.
Same.
Yeah.
This sounds a lot more like Diablo drops or Borderlands drops for that matter.
Yeah, Borderlands. I don't have a reference point for Diablo. I never played it, but I did play Borderlands and I didn't think about that. Yeah. It is a bit more like Borderlands, where every gun you find could be like, you know, just a little bit better than your current one because it's got slightly different stats on it. And that's kind of what makes this the most exciting, because as Charlie started off, for year one, every better devils you got, or whatever gun you want to put in place at better devils, you got it, and it's like, well, I've already had that gun, so the fact that I got a new one just now makes no difference to me. This is just garbage. Like it made it where drops stopped being interesting completely. It didn't matter anymore that you were finding loot, because it was all stuff that you had already seen. And now suddenly that's not going to be the case anymore for year two for Forsaken. Now, because of these random rolls on the perks that a gun can have and the stats they can have, every drop could be the better devils. It could be that version of the gun that more suits your playstyle. Maybe it's not like the best version of the gun, but for you it's the best version, and everyone's going to have different loadouts. And
I think that'll actually bring me back to Crucible finally, because the one thing I couldn't stand in year one is that there was just always a meta that you had to strive for and always just do the one mission that gave you the one gun that would have preference in PvP matches. And that just turned me off completely. Like,
yeah, it won't be a boring meta anymore. It could be like a really complex, lush meta where you have to figure out strategies that work for your play style.
Like you say it so obviously, but it makes complete sense.
And building on this even more is that the new mods in year two are going to even further customize your gun to your playstyle. So, like, sort of one thing that people have been screaming for since the beginning of Destiny 2, maybe even Destiny 1, is some way to give yourself better accuracy while you're in the air. If you're the kind of player that loves shooting while you're jumping, I'm that guy, and I've wanted this since the beginning. And so one of the mods that's going to be available is exactly that. You can apply a mod to your gun that, instead of just giving yourself +5 to power, which is just pointless, the mod will make your gun more stable in the midair, or it'll do one of like 6 other things that aren't really like perks the way that perks currently really dramatically affect the way a gun behaves in the game, but they're just like little customizations that make your gun feel more like your gun.
That's cool.
Okay, hard stop right here. Before we continue forward, I just have to say that I didn't realize how much Destiny 2 had sucked this type of stuff out of the game, because Destiny 1 just gave it to me. This was the first type of game I had really played that was like this, that had MMO style elements to the meta game. And Destiny 2 pulled that stuff back so much that the game was like basic compared to Destiny 1. And when I hear about all these things that they're essentially like re-adding in a lot of cases, or maybe like re-adding a slightly altered version of what was already there in D1, it brings me the excitement of learning the game back. And it says like, this is going to be rewarding to players who want to play it all the time, instead of just being a game that you can play and get and then like get pretty good at in a short period of time. This sounds like a game that I'm going to have to like actually read the Reddit for pretty constantly. Or like, and that seems like, I'm so surprised they moved away from this. I'm still like shocked by it. And I'm also surprised that they're moving back towards it. I don't know what discussions happened internally or how they were just like, oh my God, we ruined the game for the people who want to play it all the time, or what they actually said internally. But it's just a great joy that the game appears to be going in this direction for me personally.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming, this is my cynicism creeping in, that this is just market research that pointed towards like kids essentially wanting something easier and less challenging and more like even playing field, and so they pivoted that direction for Destiny 2, and the internet essentially has spoken, and now they're moving back to what Destiny 1 was.
One of the key things they said in the PvP sort of Twitch stream that they did was that they were going to increase the skill gap in the Crucible, which sounds like hell on earth, right? Especially for me, who's not the best at it. But at the same time, that that is what people want. They want to feel like the things that they're doing are valuable. So if you're a good player and you become better at the game, it should be represented in the game. Things like, or games like PUBG or Fortnite that are, you know, or Overwatch or something are all great at this. The better you get at the game, you literally do better and you know you're getting better and you're representing it. I'm so excited that they're like moving in that direction intentionally for PvP, especially.
Yeah, they're reducing the time to kill in multiplayer in the PvP of Destiny 2, which is game speak for the amount of time it takes a player to kill another player on average. Games like Call of Duty, or at least older Call of Duties, we're talking like, you know, Modern Warfare era, had a what was considered a very low time to kill. Like it took like a second and a half, 2 seconds at most of sustained fire to down another player in PvP. Games like Halo, which was the dominant FPS, console FPS before Call of Duty, had a much higher time to kill because they had shields. You had to give sustained damage on the order of like 3 to 4 seconds to completely kill a player. And Destiny 2 has been more on the latter end of the spectrum. They kind of increased time to kill relative to Destiny 1 and some of the other more popular shooters out there. And what that has the effect of doing is reducing the skill ceiling, basically smushing the worst players in the game and the best players of the game towards the center, to where if you're a really good player, it's harder to feel like you're really good at the game. And if you're a really bad player, you feel like you're better at the game than you actually are. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Like, obviously, if someone feels like they're bad at the game,
it probably encourages lesser players to get better because they're not discouraged as quickly, right? Like, I remember Destiny 1, like, you would occasionally just get pop, and you'd be like, what the hell, right? Like, that doesn't happen as much in Destiny 2, especially with, like, melees, right? It was, like, 2-tap melees, and you were down. Destiny 2, the melees were 3-taps, so, like, you're engaged in a fight a little bit in Destiny 2. Like, but at the same time, once you see, like, oh, I can just hit someone with my melee twice, that's something you can, like, strive for and get good at, and then all of a sudden, you're the one who's having that, like, really powerful moment, and you feel more powerful because you're doing more heroic things.
The funny thing is that Bungie's actually done this before, almost exactly. Whenever Halo 2 first released, way back in 2005, they completely nerfed melees and grenades. It took 6 melee hits to kill another player.
That sounds insane.
Yeah, it was actually dumb. Like, people were just laughing at the game because, like, in Halo 1 established really cemented the trinity of, like, gunplay, gunplay, melee, and grenades. Grenades would almost instantly kill. Melees would almost instantly kill. If you had any amount of, like, damage on you, probably you were going to die if you got meleeed or grenaded. And then, of course, the guns were also really strong. Halo 2, when it first came out, they were like, we just wanted to be about the gun. So melees suck, grenades suck. And then everybody hated the game. Because it broke that, like, trinity. Well, by year 2, they had fixed it. They reduced melees down to, like, 2 to 3 hits, and grenades actually were where grenades should be again, and everyone was happy again. And for whatever reason, Bungie decided to make the same mistakes again, and lo and behold, it had the same effects. Nobody liked it, and now they're fixing it.
Do we know if those people that worked on the original scenario are the same people that are working on Destiny now?
Probably not too many of them, if I had to guess. That was, well over a decade ago. And part of the Halo team split whenever Microsoft and Bungie's deal finally severed. Bungie didn't want to work on Halo anymore. They went to make Destiny. And then Microsoft started 343 Studios, which retained, I think, probably a decent amount of the Halo team talent. But who knows? Maybe there is some design lead still lingering from the beginning of Halo 2 that was, like, trying to sneak their ways back into Destiny.
Their anti-melee ways.
Yeah.
I mean, it's nice to hear that the one consistent thing is that they listen to their player base, albeit late and over a long period of time, but they listen nonetheless.
Yep. If that's, you can say one good thing about Bungie, it's definitely that they definitely like to, they respect that one of the reasons why they've been as successful as they are is because they have a crazy dedicated fan base, and that hasn't changed with Destiny. And they know they can't make those people mad or they'll lose them.
I mean, yeah, if this was 6 months ago and you guys were saying that Bungie was listening, I would have taken issue with that. But I will say now that it's been a half a year of them listening and making changes, and the game's obviously like in a much better spot, and it looks like it's about to get into a great spot. And that is because they did listen, and they also, they didn't listen blindly. They still have their opinions clearly, but they're doing a much better job of communicating all of those opinions as they come up, like with their weekly updates now. It's awesome to see them set the goals for every decision that they're making. They say like, the goal of this is to make this more fun for these reasons, or this to be more challenging for these reasons. They're stating it all very clearly. And what's cool is as I read the thing, it's like, okay, I agree with that goal. I agree with that goal. I don't agree with that goal. I agree with that goal. So that's why this decision makes sense or doesn't make sense. It includes me in the process, even though I'm not really included in it, but it like, I can come to the same conclusions that they did because they're stating their way of thinking along the way. And all of a sudden I feel like, oh, they're doing it. They're doing it different than like, let's say Epic is with like Fortnite, where they just constantly are just shock and awe, keeping people excited. Mm-hmm. This is pretty different. They're like actually listening far more to the people who are playing the game and trying to make the game that they want to play. And now it's starting to become authentic feeling. It feels like there has been a communication between the people who love this game and the company that's making it. And those things are starting to align. And that's pretty impressive to see.
Yeah, that's really cool. Two quick things. I'm reading some high-level notes on this. Can we talk about how they're finally going to allow bulk shader deletion? That's that alone is purchase worthy.
The best
trailer part, had to move back away from the mic to laugh at that one.
I leaned in back in my chair totally. Yep. The best part though is that they're waiting until this expansion to do it. Like, why didn't you roll that out day one when you knew everyone hated this thing? Like, I want to know what the thing was. Is why the decision was to hold it back for months and months and months. Like, no one's liked this shader deletion thing the whole time. I've counted at some point and it's been like 40, 60 minutes or something just deleting shaders. Like, I've given Bungie like an hour of my life to do something that is pointless.
Yeah, I think somebody on Reddit asked one of the main designers, UI designers, why this is a thing. And I'm going to butcher this, but the logic behind this was that originally the inventory was designed for you to undo mistakes. And so the infrastructure was...
So you just can't... Sorry? Oh, so yeah. I'm sorry. I'm jumping out.
I don't know. So the infrastructure was set up so that you could buy things piece by piece individually and not in bulk. And because the former didn't exist, the latter created the effect of not being able to do things en masse. And so they had to like fix both sides in order for this one feature to work.
They definitely had an emphasis on this game when it came out for keeping you from doing things that you may not want to do, which I can appreciate because there's plenty of dumb things I could accidentally do in this game, like delete a gun that I don't want to delete. But it kind of went to the point where it just was really annoying how difficult it was to do those things when you actually wanted to do them.
Yeah, for as innovative as their UI was when it first came out with the, like, floating cursor instead of having to like select each individual thing and bringing focus to it, there sure are some misses that they haven't yet fixed, but it sounds like they are fixing. A question for you guys. I haven't read much into this, but do they finally have gear sets? Like, do those now have like stats and elemental effects and all that stuff, or no?
Wait, what do you mean by gear sets?
Like the Iron Banner set is sick, but it doesn't meaningfully make a difference in combat. Have they fixed anything?
I don't think they've addressed that directly. I mean, in Destiny 1, there were definitely more things like that. Like, you had to wear all your Iron Banner gear in Iron Banner, and that would give you more rank as you were playing, right? Like, it had like an obvious reason to wear that gear during that time, and therefore you'd get some bonus. The only thing that's kind of like that now is the Leviathan gear. But I don't think they, as far as I know, haven't done anything too much further with it than that.
I think they've hinted at doing stuff like that. I think they've acknowledged like that people like the effect of the Leviathan gear or the raid gear, and that they know people would like to see more stuff like that. So I'm assuming they're working on stuff like that, and they've expressed that they want to make armor a little more interesting. So that might be coming, but I haven't read anything to indicate that it's coming with Forsaken.
Because I'm imagining stuff like, say you, if the loot drops apply to armor as well and they're randomized and so on, say you optimize for like stamina or for range, and if you get the complete set, it like has, it creates some kind of aura around your character, and it like influences the way your super looks, and like it just further customizes the way, not just the way you play, but the way you your character is perceived in the battlefield and in PvE instances. Whereas, I mean, that, and I'm purely going down that road because I'm used to that from like Diablo games and other Blizzard titles and so on.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, that sounds really good. And if I wasn't being kind of defensive for Bungie right now, I'd be like, hey, we're doing good. We're going to get there. Because like, I feel like at least they're doing some stuff right. But that sounds like a very logical next step if they haven't already considered it already, which I would imagine they have just because of the success of the Leviathan, like Masterworks armor and all that stuff. Yeah. So, and this like most recent grind thing, the Solstice armor, like that also has like this very special element to it, which is, it feels exciting. It's like people really wanted this armor, and I saw a lot of people grind a lot of hours just to get this armor. And that was sort of a first for Destiny 2, where I was like, oh, it's worth it, right? It's like worth it to get it.
That's cool. Also, that electric bow looks awesome. I'm looking forward to that.
Oh man, I'm so pumped about bows. After watching them use them in the multiplayer, I was like, okay, that actually looks really fun to use.
Yeah.
I've been hearing about, you know, the weapons going in any slot sort of situation for a while, but it's becoming more clear what's really happening, which is weapon types are going to be assigned to different slots, but those weapon types are not exclusively assigned to those slots. So you might get a shotgun in that, like, energy weapon slot, right? In fact, Hawthorne's is actually going there. It's going to be an energy weapon slot from what I understand. And when it finally clicked to me what that meant, I was like, oh, cool. Like I can run the hand cannon, a shotgun, and then a sniper rifle. Like that's an actual loadout I can do. And that's something I really want to do. So I really look forward to the flexibility of the slots, but I also like that they're not super flexible really still, because I have to still work, like there's still a challenge to it to get the loadouts right. Like if I don't have the shotgun in an energy slot, I have to go get that type of shotgun. And I like that it's going to bring some more challenge to get the right type of guns for the right type of slots.
Yep. I've also read that they're now going further down the road of making the ammo you pick up more important. And so it'll still be tied to certain slots, but based on what weapon you have in a certain slot, it'll restrict how much ammo you have for that weapon as well.
And also in PvP, people, when you take them down, when you get eliminations, they will always be dropping ammo, it appears, but not just like heavy like it is now. They'll be dropping whatever I think that they were using. So you'll be picking up little bits of ammo constantly throughout the game, throughout the match, which I think will also add a little more variety to that PvP ammo game that's been going on.
That's cool.
Yeah. So if you like, if you've got like a kinetic shotgun or an energy shotgun in your loadout, which are traditionally heavy weapons, you're only going to spawn with two shots in that shotgun, or one shot split between those two slots if you're running a kinetic and an energy shotgun for some insane reason. And if you haven't spent that ammo, whenever you die in PvP, someone else gets to pick it up, and they get ammo for their potentially their kinetic or energy shotgun. So it's not going to just be like free reign of shotguns in PvP just because they're making these changes, which is good because I was legitimately worried about that.
Yeah. But what I really hope, and I don't know if it'll do this, but I think that the heavy ammo game in PvP right now is over the top, right? Like, especially in trials, it's like, if you're not getting the heavy, if you're not holding that position to get the heavy, it's basically no fun. And I would like to believe that there'll be more distribution of ammo so that there's other ways to get your ammo other than just holding positions.
Well, the other part of that too is just the reduction of time to kill is going to mean that it'll be more likely that you can still overcome even if the other team gets the heavy.
Yeah, you're right.
Because your weapons are going to be killing them quicker.
I guess there'll be less holding. There'll be less holding of hallways. There'll be less holding of positions for ammo. There'll be less just holding. Because right now the game feels, PvP, especially trials, feels very just like, when you're in an even battle, it feels just very like gridlocked. Mm-hmm. It'll probably keep it more fluid feeling. Okay. Anything else we want to talk about for a second?
I'm just pumped. Yeah. Which is weird. And it's even weirder to hear Chris agree.
Yeah, I'm usually the Destiny 2 hater, but that's only because I can't be doing the same thing over and over again and then expecting the same result or just mm-hmm. netting out to the same result. I need fresh content. I need there to be a reason to continue the grind. That's more than just, hey, get this new chest plate. It'll look cool. Like, it needs to have an effect on the game for me. And it sounds like these changes will get me there.
Okay, well, we'll bring you back on in like a month and a half and see if they did it or not. It'll be interesting.
Yeah.
We were talking to Jeff, our friend who before Destiny 2 came out said, like, he was just like, I just don't want this game to have a grind at all. And then the game came out and barely had a grind. And then now that it has no grind, he was actually like, I kind of want it to have more of a grind.
Yeah. I mean, like, when the last expansion came out, real quick, spoiler for whoever has not played the latest DLC, but when that, I think I remember us piece by piece, like, we had a fire team or two fire teams in parallel in Discord playing, and one of us was further ahead than the other one, and we had just beaten the main boss, and all three of us were like, was that it? We didn't recognize that was the main guy we were supposed to fight. And then you guys mm-hmm. had jumped into our channel after having beaten it as well and had the same reaction without us having said anything. And I just don't want that to repeat ever. Like, make it painfully, frustratingly hard. Now, collect the frustration from your player base. But then when people do beat it, reap the rewards of people feeling like they've accomplished something. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't get the sense of that in anything in Destiny 2 aside from like beating hard PvP matches. None of the PvE stuff had any of that. Whereas Destiny 1 for me totally had that, especially in the Dreadnought. Yeah. Anyway.
All right. And with that, Bungie, nail it or we're all bouncing. Okay. So now we're going to talk about some PUBG Player Unknown Battlegrounds. So we've talked about this game on the show before. We had a full episode dedicated to it. I played this game quite a bit, maybe 6 months ago, and I personally sort of got away from it. And the reason I got away from it is because I played a game called Fortnite, and Fortnite was less broken than PUBG. that was like basically the reason I switched. PUBG was frustrating to me because I would go to try to get into a car and I'd instantly die, or I would try to step up into something and I'd get stuck, and then all of a sudden I would die for some reason. I felt like I was having too many bugs in the game for it to be fun. And I felt, because of the inconsistencies I was experiencing, I could never really get too good at the game or whatever. But the whole thing was, I had an option, which is I started playing Fortnite. And at least at that particular time, Fortnite was like pretty bugless and pretty butter smooth. And it got me really excited about quality in a game like that and what that would bring. So I invested a lot in that. I would say, Chris, for the most part, you have stuck with PUBG through this time period.
That is very true. I'm currently looking at my Steam hours played, and I'm at, embarrassed to say that I'm at 865 hours.
Yes.
Jesus,
that's amazing. I think I'm under 400, but over 300. So.
So you've wasted half a month. I'm at a month, a full month. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the game is in many ways still broken. I believe we're talking about this because they announced the Fix PUBG initiative, in which they've outlined essentially a roadmap for when they anticipate fixing certain things. That's an upside. I mean, a lot of the criticism has been that I almost said Blue Balls Entertainment because I'm watching too much Dr. Disrespect. But the company behind the game has been criticized for not listening enough, for not building in changes or updates, and instead releasing cosmetic updates and so on. So this seems like a turning point, which got people excited. I will say, though, since the time we have all played, the game has gotten better. Like, the new weapon balances are better. The consistency and frames are significantly improved. There's no more random, like, frame drops in the middle of a battle, which then forces you to die. And they've optimized a lot of the geometry as well. So there's no, like, falling into cracks or, like, dying randomly. The cars don't float away and explode midair. Like, all the stuff. A normal
game. As much.
Yeah, I mean.
I want to confirm what you just said. I played for the first time, actually, in a while, a couple times this week. And I was impressed. It felt more rock solid than it had previously. And this is before this large set of fixes is really coming in. These things seem like they're going to roll in over the next 3 months from what I could tell from their timeline.
Yeah, I mean, that is what inspired hope. And I feel like that's what a lot of people are wanting to see now, especially that, like, Call of Duty and Battlefield are also stepping into the arena, which is Battle Royale. And so there's the back and forth. Like, the games will be different. The fighting mechanics will be different. They're going to add new gimmicks, but nothing, for me anyway, is going to touch the crispness that this game has introduced when it comes to fighting. Like, all the weapons are purely based on what you've picked up and what you're comfortable with, and the rest is communication and strategy. That'll, like, no other gimmick is going to replace that for me. And that's what I'm worried about with Call of Duty and their, like, specials and, like, microwave through wall tracker thing and whatever Battlefield's going to introduce with tanks and destructible environments.
Yeah, there's something that's just clean about this game, especially going to Fortnite and coming back to it. It's like, oh, all I really have to concentrate on here is, like, if I'm in the right position and if I know where they are. there's something really that was pure about that to me when I originally was playing the game, that I remember saying specifically at the time that the game felt like childhood play, right? Like, it's just so simple, really, on one level, but because that simplicity is so tuned in a way, you have the ability to play it any way you want and figure it out from there. And it feels really open as a game. Whereas I think, yeah, you're right, like Call of Duty or Battlefield, they're going to probably have more gimmicks to the whole gameplay, and it's likely going to not feel as pure as this. And I think all the purists are going to probably try to stick with this game unless for some reason one of those other big names does a really good job.
Yeah, the Battlefield one is something that's holding out hope so far, since their server architecture, or the DICE's, has traditionally been very, like, high quality. They've also announced that they're rolling out custom servers or dedicated servers. And so that's been the one pain point that PUBG still has to contend with, which is some of your shots still not feeling reliable, which is even compounded with their replay system, which is like a rough recording of what the server saw, which just amplifies the effect of you not feeling confident in your shots. And so if they can fix that, or if any company can fix that, I think they'll have a solid winner on their hands.
So yeah, what do you think then, as a person who genuinely enjoys the game, what do you think is the thing that they could do for you to improve it the most right now?
It's the consistency part, 100%. There's still shots, or there's still engagements that the team takes on, where we could have sworn we've done everything right, and we could have sworn we've aimed just right, and it just didn't happen. And yeah.
Very fast.
Yeah, it's totally frustrating. I want my lack of positioning, or like my lack of communication, to be the thing that kills me, not the server not having seen a certain shot.
Yeah, that would feel intentional, and then there'd be no reason to even consider another game, because you would be doing the thing that you want to be doing and being rewarded for it in this game.
Totally, yeah. The reason people get frustrated about this thing is because the potential is so high. Like, the weapon mechanics, in the way that the bullet drop is engineered, and how certain weapons are made to shoot further, although slower or louder, and versus quieter, like, that's all super tuned in. It's just whether or not the shot will land. That's not consistent.
Yeah, I've always felt like not that I almost said Blue Balls as well. Blue Hole wasn't, I never felt like Blue Hole wasn't listening, or maybe a little bit, but I've actually had a lack of confidence that they were capable mm-hmm. of fixing some of this stuff. And I imagine that I'm wrong about that because they have done many things in the game which are really, really strong. And like, actually after playing Fortnite or something, I come back to PUBG and I'm like, wow, like there's stuff that looks really bad about this game, but there's a lot of things about this game that are like a visual masterpiece. It's like it's actually really beautiful in some ways, and I think they are capable of a lot of greatness, but I think they've probably been overwhelmed. Like they got thrown into a position of being one of the most popular games in the whole world and having a lot of attention on them, and they were still like a really small team. And yeah
it's
probably got overwhelmed. Totally.
They're a victim of essentially being super popular too fast. And they've admitted that, right? He's Brendan Green, I believe his name is. He's gone on record mm-hmm. as far as saying that, like, yeah, they are scaling it as fast as they can, and has even mentioned that he has a separate team essentially rewriting the game from scratch to make it better optimized, since they know a lot more now. Mm. I'm worried for them, since like EA has essentially thrown thousands and thousands of dollars at Battlefield to compete. We'll see how that goes.
So just to chime in, I played PUBG maybe 8 months ago or so. I finally picked it up because everyone's playing it. I have friends playing it. I wanted to give it a shot. I was not excited about it. I played the game more than the allotted, like what 2 hours that Steam gives you where you can return. most of that time I felt was spent in loading screens and, dealing with crashes and stuff, versus actually playing the game. And I actually made an argument to Valve to try to get a refund because I just was so unsatisfied with the game. I hated it so much. And the reasons why weren't that I felt like it was fundamentally like a bad game. Like I understood why people liked it. I got the appeal of it, like the game design. From a game design perspective, I felt like it had the right idea. The implementation was just falling short, and that's what was getting me. I just couldn't hang. One of the things that really drove me nuts and kept me from wanting to play the game was the amount of time that I felt like I had to fiddle with inventory. As someone new to the game, I didn't know anything about any of the guns. I didn't know why I wanted this gun over this gun, or maybe I didn't, or what attachments were good for what gun, what ammo was good for what gun, et cetera, et cetera. Like, I just would stare at my inventory for like way too long, only to inevitably die either soon afterward, or, during or something. And I couldn't help but wonder why it required so much attention to the inventory. Like, obviously people are capable of getting really good at it, and that's was part of the skill gap even to a certain degree, and I can appreciate that. But contrast that with Fortnite, which has this very simple to understand color coding of guns, where new players don't have to necessarily know what guns are good. They can look at the color and be like, and make a pretty good guess as to it's probably a good idea if I pick up this blue and drop this green. This is all to ask the question, because I haven't looked at the fixed PUBG notes or anything, and I haven't played it in months. Have they made any progress in that area, or does it look like they're going to in the future? Because that might be a reason that I'd give the game a shot again, because I actually still own it. I didn't get that refund.
Oh, sorry. That makes me sad for you. So there's two things I'll point out there. What I saw Fortnite doing is that regardless of which gun you pick up, there's different classes for that gun. The same thing is not true for PUBG, right? There's only one UMP, one M16, and the weapons are meant to be used in different scenarios. There is no like better stat M16, for example. There's just an M16. Mm-hmm. They can slap some attachments on to have it have less recoil or less bullet spread, HUD or something like that. I kind of like that more only because it evens the playing field, whereas you have to like come across a shotgun that's better than the one that the other guy has. And then it's less about like who sees the other person first and who shot first. It's more about, well, I got the golden shotgun and you didn't.
Sure.
Yeah. Having dumped a ton of hours into both these games, like, yeah, to me, there is more nuance to the weapons in PUBG. I, to this day, am not exactly, well, they've gotten rebalanced a lot since the last time I've been playing a lot. So it's actually interesting because some of the guns I really preferred before didn't seem as amazing now. And some of the ones that I thought were, or like the VSS I thought was always trash, and now it's like kind of badass apparently. Like there's like no nuance to the weapons and why you'd want to use them in certain cases. In Fortnite, it's really, it is helpful that the color class to the weapons exists, because it's like, oh, I got a blue shotgun, that's better than the gray one, cool. Yep. I'm down. And it makes it easy, but there's still nuance to why you'd use the different weapons at different times, but it's not as visceral, I guess, as the way I describe PUBG. PUBG, you really need to understand the gun more in order to use it properly. And Fortnite is more obvious.
Yeah. If you've only played it for a couple hours or a little over a couple hours, and then you then decided that it wasn't like your type of game, that's totally fair. Anybody I've helped start with the game, I've advised essentially to just take a few games, take it easy. Like, given that positioning is the most important thing in this game, like by far, since the weapon system isn't as deep or nuanced as, in my opinion, Fortnite is, given like the different classes and tiers and so on. That just like getting familiar with the map and getting a feel for the weapons, knowing that you're going to die repeatedly a lot to begin with, is totally fine. Like that's kind of what Mate and I did when we first started out. Whereas this, yeah, we're going to die all the time. That's fine. The game is buggy. You got to get familiar with the weapons. Totally cool. Positioning and how to talk as a team, that's what's going to get you the win. Less so around like which gun you've picked up that has 5.56 ammo.
I would also say, after not having played a long time and playing with you guys this week, I noticed how much your communication skills had increased since the last time I dipped out. Everything was like super accurate. They'd be like, I won't do a good job of it, but it'd be like, you'd be like, I see two people at 2:45, like they're like, and you described the hill they're on, and it was much easier for me to actually pick up and know where they are because the communication skills of you guys who have been playing it constantly has just escalated to the point where everything you say makes a lot of sense and it's very rapid. And that was back when I was playing it, no one had really gotten super great at that stuff yet. And we were always kind of fumbling in those moments to like identify the situation, attack at the same time to the same area. It seems like that is a place for improvement in the game over the course of a long term of playing it.
Yeah, and I'm totally down, more than happy to take you down a few of those games to get you to feel like the positive vibes, so to see if we can win you back over.
Yeah, I'll give it another shot.
We'll trade 30 hours of Octopath for 30 hours of PUBG.
30 hours. Oh man. No, I do think I just love shooting people. No, and you know, I hear you guys as in you PUBG players talking all the time about just how good you feel that despite the shortcomings of the net code and whatever else, that the shooting just is real fun, and I love me some good shoots. So you know, maybe I just didn't give it enough time and I just need to get better at sliding things around.
Well, in my inventory, according to this roadmap, I think you should play Forsaken, and then by the end of September, most of these fixes are going to be in PUBG, so that might be a good time to try it out then.
Yeah. Cool. I mean, yeah, there's the nice thing is that you can like play back certain clips or record it for you through NVIDIA Shadow Play. There's just some highlights in the game that, in the same way that like Battlefield was marketing their game as being the only game that has Battlefield moments, This is the only game that has like pure PUBG moments where you could be on the other side of the map and snipe a guy that's aimlessly running down a hill and he had no idea. And then you seeing the bullet hit and him go down is so satisfying. It's super, super rare, but the calculation you had to make for the angle that he's running down, plus the zeroing, plus the time it's going to take for that bullet to reach him, such a good feeling.
I will say, yeah, one more thing I want to hit on is a comparison between Fortnite and PUBG again. PUBG, like, Fortnite is a lot of fun, but PUBG, I remember specifically saying this at the time, and I still believe it. Every game of PUBG is a story. Like, you are actually creating a story with every single game and how you get to the point where it completes. It always, there is like an actual sense of progression through the game each time. And that creates like those moments that are very epic feeling for various reasons. Even if it's just someone flipping a truck over onto you or something, you're like, I can't believe that happened, because it feels like anything really is possible. That being said, one thing I wish I understood is the load times still feel very slow for it. Fortnite, the game spins up super quick. I haven't played the smaller map in PUBG, but I know just that 1 minute in the lobby after playing Fortnite for a long time always feels like torturously long.
Yeah, I agree.
Does it feel that way for you even?
Oh, it still does. Getting into a game should be instant. Like, especially for a game where the objective is to either, is to like die 99%. I should just be able to jump into a game straight from the death screen.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a bummer that they can't match the games quicker, or at least get them rolling quicker. The matching seems slower than Fortnite, but simultaneously, there just seems like there's this unnecessary wait period then. And then, yeah, that would be awesome if they really sped that stuff up. I think it would make the game more accessible because people could play more rounds and therefore get better at it quicker.
Yeah, totally. The time between games feels, like you mentioned, like a punishment. Yeah.
Okay. Did we hit on what we needed to here?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
All right. I want to thank you both, Chris. Thank you, Nathan. Thank you. Thank you for coming on the show and talking about these things, these games that we are passionate about, and how we have, hopefully people who are listening also, I'm going to cut this part. I sound like an idiot, but thank you for coming on the show. And, anything else?
Yeah. Thanks for having me. Thanks for, allowing me to have some awareness about a new game I'll buy on my Switch, and for you, Nathan, for hopefully being another PUBG player. Yeah.
I think we all got something out of this today.
Now, like, a rainbow shows up when we hold hands as the sun.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much for listening. You can find us on Twitter at games_UX. And we have a website, games-UX. You can find a website. I'm sure you can. Okay. Check you later. Bye.